Atlanta Life Radio Station, WALR, bringing you the best in talk radio.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Soul Inspirations. I'm your host, Christine KFC, and as always, bringing you the music, magic, and message that matters. On behalf of the entire Atlanta Life Radio team, I'd like to thank Memphis musician Brian Jarrett, who wrote and performed our show's music, and to our sponsors, a special thanks for supporting this program that is focused on bringing the best in inspirational talk radio to you. So, thanks for joining us in the studio today. If you're a regular listener, welcome back. But if this is your first time listening in, we'd just like to let you know a little bit about the show. Soul Inspirations is a live and podcast talk radio music show where I chat with musicians from all over the world, from every music genre, and pretty much at every point in their career. We talk about their journey, their inspiration, and in doing so, hopefully you're uplifted and inspired to discover and pursue your life's purpose and passion. So let's go ahead and get started with today's guest. I am very excited and privileged to be able to introduce to you today Domingo Guyton. Domingo is a very gifted musician, drummer, recording artist, music and film producer, songwriter. He's been a previous college professor. He's produced over 200 songs, filmed numerous music videos, and released at least 10 CDs. He's won several awards for his music and filmmaking efforts, one such award being the Best Documentary for HBO Films at the Martha's Vineyard African American Film Festival. And as a highly sought-after inspirational and motivational speaker, he travels across the country speaking and performing at a variety of diverse venues, where he shares and raps about his troubled childhood and how the saving grace of God transformed his life. He's also the president and founder of his own company, Hope Multimedia. He joins us today having just come off two back-to-back spectacular movie premieres in Atlanta for his new biographical documentary, film titled Footprints in the Concrete. He both directed and produced the film and the soundtrack. So that was just released a few days ago. So let's go ahead and welcome Domingo to the show. Hey, Domingo, welcome.
Oh, thank you so much, Christine. That was a long intro.
but thank you
so much.
Yeah, well, you know, when I was taking my notes and getting my intro together, I thought, you know, gosh, you deserve the accolades, and you've done and accomplished so much, and quite honestly, that's probably the tip of the iceberg, you know?
Amen. It's been a great journey. I would not have been able to do it without family, without a church family, without friends, without other mentors, and so I don't accept that just by myself. I have to say that I had a lot of help, and I just thank the Lord that I'm able to be here to experience.
Yeah. And you're so humble, and anyone that knows you knows that about you. So I just love that about you. I did mention that you just this past weekend, I believe, had back-to-back movie premieres for your Footprints in the Concrete film that you just directed and produced. How was that? How was the premiere?
Oh, we did the premiere in Atlanta last Saturday, and then the Saturday that just passed, we did it at the Bronze Lens Film Festival, and it was received very well. I was taken back the amount of support that we had in Atlanta, seeing that I'm not an Atlanta native, and there's a lot of, you know, folks who are, you know, not natives and don't get the love that the natives get, or, you know, they know that there are all these people coming from other areas. So I was just taken back by the support that was there. It was wonderful.
Yeah. And you're such an inspiration and a blessing to everybody. Now, the film and the soundtrack, they're basically, it's basically a biographical depiction of your life growing up, I guess, in the inner city of Boston. Of course, you face the typical obstacles that probably most inner city kids face, but you face them, you overcame them. It's basically what the film's about. Let's start out, and we'll just go step by step here. We'll fast forward in a couple of points because, you know, we have an hour. But start out. Tell me about your home life as a child and how your journey started.
Well, I mean, growing up in the inner city, I grew up with my mom and my grandmother and a host of other family members, and they did all they could to keep me sheltered and keep me on the straight and narrow. At the same time, you know, even when in church, I could see the way that the church members treated my mom different. I could see the way I was treated different. So it wasn't always lovely. My mom mm-hmm. and my grandma tried to do their best to keep me away from evil, but it's impossible. It's all around us, even in the church. Mm-hmm. And so that was tough. And then I went through a host of things. I was kidnapped when I was 2 years old and was gone for several days. And then I had, growing up, I always had asthma issues going in and out of the hospital. And then when I became a teenager, I began having issues with some of the gang members in my neighborhood. And so it was a constant battle. I've had pretty, it's been a little bit low-key being an adult because I think I had so much horrible stuff going on as a youngster. So I guess it balances itself out a little bit.
Yeah, and, you know, I kind of look at kind of my own life and my kids' lives and just friends who I know what their lives have been about, and sometimes that is the way God works it out. I mean, he puts you through several different seasons in life. And so you kind of went through what you went through in your childhood, but now you're ripe and you're giving back and you're doing, you know, for his glory. And so, you know, you kind of have to go through that sharpening and those life lessons and everything. Let's back up a little bit here. So from what I know, and I was able to view your film, it was so good. So you grew up in a Christian home. You did have a lot of great influences. Your beautiful mother, is it Noella? Your grandmother. Yeah, you had a grandmother. All of your family seemed to be into music. So it seems like you had an awesome support group. From a spiritual standpoint, Domingo, and this is very common, I found, what do you think it is about people like yourself that they grow up in Christian homes and they have that wonderful influence and they have that structure and stability, but at some point, temptation and life and the realities of the world come into their life and they're kind of sucked out of that foundation? And why do you think God allows that to happen? What do you think's going on there? Because it's very common, I find.
I find that, for me, when I think back on those days, it's easy now to kind of dictate why I went through things and mm-hmm. how they shape who I am today. And I have the experience, you know, being kicked out of a public school, being kicked out of a predominantly white public school in the 11th grade, and then being forced to go to a predominantly black school in the inner city.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that was an experience, and it was horrible. My mom was crushed, but it was great because I got to see the disadvantage. I got to see how blessed I was at that predominantly white school for 11 years, and then going to the inner city and seeing what they were studying, it was an instant learning. I said, oh, my goodness.
Wow.
So it's like it's things like that that I could never explain. The only way you have to go through it. So I know it was bad. You know, even though I was stabbed 4 times and I had to go into the hospital several. I went to a hospital. You know, like I said, as a toddler, I was always in the hospital for asthma. And then when I was when I became a teenager, it was sometimes asthma, but then it became violent you know, things that happened. So I had been hospitalized with 8 stitches in my head. I had to get, you know, I had got pistol whipped, and then another time I had got stabbed, and then I had to stay in the hospital. Then one time I got into a fight after I got stabbed, and one of my stab wounds I got infected, so I had to go back to the hospital. But through going through the hospital, I was able to start working in the hospital. So then I started getting summer jobs at Boston City Hospital, and then I could do summer. I was doing summer school in the morning, which they were paying me, and then in the afternoon, I was getting paid to work in the pathology laboratory. I was able to work in a pharmacy, so it kept me off the street. It gave me money over the summer, and it got me working in health in these different health arenas. And so, but I would never would have got connected to that had I had not gotten stabbed and went to the hospital anyway.
Right, exactly. And I noticed in watching the film, there's that theme throughout that everything that seemed to be a negative in your life, every burden, turned it around and used it as a blessing. It's to me, it's so obvious. And I want to bring up the point here. So, you know, in school, you said you got kicked out of the predominantly white school that you attended. You ended up going back to the school in the neighborhood where you grew up, which presented, of course, a whole nother mess of circumstances and that kind of thing. So I guess at the root of all of that, during that time, and let's stay at that point right now, you had a lot of anger and conflict with other people. Where do you think that came from?
I think it came from my mom being treated different, and then I knew my mom had a mental illness. So her being treated different by family, by church people, and then she treated me different. She was almost like my big sister. She really wasn't like a mom. She was more like an older sister who was there, and we got into arguments, and I had to go tell my grandmother on her. And then I didn't have my father around. I also asked a lot of questions about him, and she wouldn't really tell me much. So I think that just with everything that was going on, I could see that my mom was being treated different, and I could see that some of the people treated me different. And I didn't like that. You know, I was called a Puerto Rican, and at the time I lived in a predominantly, I mean, everybody in my family was considered black or African American, and I was the one that had a little bit of a different flavor to the way, you know, I looked. And so they called me a Puerto Rican, and it was like a way of pointing down at me, like, oh, you little Puerto Rican, you know, it wasn't like something to be proud of. It was more like a
division.
And so that, you know, being treated different like that, and then my grandmother would have to stick up for me. He's not a Puerto Rican. You know, all of that stuff, you know, kind of, that brought a lot of anger to me as a youngster.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I go into the community, I would be often getting into fights. In school and in the community, I was always in some kind of fight with somebody somewhere.
Right.
So I was just walking around, and so I just began to put on this tough guy attitude, like, well, I guess this is how I have to be.
And I
began carrying weapons because I started getting jumped. I was getting robbed. And I was like, what are you supposed to do?
Well, you did mention your grandmother, and I know she's since passed, but you do say that in the film that she was definitely your rock. She seemed like she had a lot taking care of a brother, I believe you mentioned. Her brother had Down syndrome.
Yes.
You know, she had a lot on her plate, and she was a rock.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah. What would you like to say about that?
Well, she grew up in South Carolina. She left. She had, you know, she was always taking care of her children and taking care of other people's children. She had 3 husbands. All of them died. And so she, you know, she had one husband. She had a child, and, like, he was, like, shot. Then she married another guy, and, like, he had, like, cancer or something. And then she married my grandfather, and he died when my mom was, like, 2, and he died of, like, tuberculosis or something. And it's like, so she went through 3 guys, and she came up from the South, came to Boston from South Carolina, tried to make a new life for herself, trying to take care of her children, her and her sister. They came up here, and they brought their mom. They brought them up, you know, to get out of the South, they had better opportunity. They were working on, like, cigar factories in Boston and Springfield. And, like, so, you know, they really, then my aunt and my grandmother got a hair salon together in Boston. So they were, like, entrepreneurs, and they were, like, just holding everything together. And it's just, that was really, really empowering to see that.
Sure. And when I think about it, God was actually preparing that soil, them, you know, for you, for, you know, for what, yeah, for what you would become. And I know we've messaged back a few times back and forth, and just seeing those seeds that were planted by all of those people in your life who were very, seemingly very motivated and intelligent and talented and gifted people. But like a lot of us, maybe just not born into the best of circumstances, or things happen, like you said, with your grandmother, you know, her husband's died and this and that happened. So, there's, definitely wanted to give, you know, props and respect to both your mother and grandmother for what they've done, you know, and the fact that I'm even, you know, talking with you here today, you know. So I think that's really cool, and I totally respect that, and you honoring that. I want to talk real quick before we play our first song that we're going to play here. There was one point I know in the documentary you talked about, really, again, the burden or the negative in your life, the pulse, the energy that drew you to the street, probably as a 12, 13-year-old. Your parent, your mother tried so hard to keep you in the house, keep you off the street, keep you away from all the negativity. But that pulse and the energy which drew you out to the street, as we now know, is really the blessing. It's the same pulse and energy that is what you're about. It's the music and the passion. But what do you think about that when you think about metaphors like that? I mean, I think it's very cool how God works.
I feel a part of my heart is always broken because most of my friends, and like, I look at 10 of my friends, 10 of our enemies, 10 of my cousins' friends, 10 of my cousins' enemies. I look at like a group of 40. And I just kind of, I look at the group of 40, and out of that, in every single situation you'll have, and so my group of 10, you know, I made it out. Another one of my friends, you know, is like a police officer. Another one of my friends, you know, they're taking care of their families, and, you know, some of them have been in and out of jail. And then there's like two or three of them that are deported to Jamaica and Haiti because of junk guns and drug charges. And you have two or three that are dead. Two or three that are in prison. I have a friend doing prison, doing life sentence. So it's like, and when I look at some of the guys that we were having issues with, it's the same thing. You know, four of them are dead. Four of them are locked up. There's one or two that have kind of made it out. And it's so, a part of my heart is really broken for my friends who didn't make it and those who didn't make it out. And then my enemies, the people that we, quote unquote, so-called had problems with. We don't even know what we had issues with now, but those guys, their lives are ruined. Their families, you know, some of them are behind bars. There's a whole bunch of them that are dead. And then, you know, so even the guys who stabbed me, there's like four or five of them that are doing double life sentences for shooting and killing someone else. And so it's like those families, those people have been sitting in jail since 1993. Like, my heart is broken because God saw fit that I wouldn't go down that route, let alone I was involved with some of the same stuff that they were all involved in, but I made it out.
Right. I do like one part in the film where you talk about, and you chuckle a bit, and I had to smile because you talk about the time that kind of you had somewhat of a meeting or an altercation with some dude that was, you know, on the corner or whatever, and your mother ended up, you know, kind of seeing you, and she takes her umbrella, and you called it pulling the Jesus card, and she scared him away, didn't she?
You ran away. I was like, whoa, I didn't think that was going to be that easy. Maybe I should call on Jesus' name too. Maybe it'll work that easy, but of course I didn't do that. But I was shocking. Yeah, she pulled the umbrella out, started waving at him, yelling Jesus, and then he turned around and just ran.
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, the flip side of that card is that, you know, there was a bit of you know, payback, unfortunately, for that. But, you know, we're gonna continue to talk. I want to, at this point, go ahead and play the first song we're going to play during the hour. We're going to play another one a little bit later. But this one's called, this song's called Through It All, and it features a singer. Her name is Latricia Robinson. And
yes.
it's from the soundtrack of Footprints in the Concrete. So let's go ahead now. We're going to listen to Through It All by Domingo Guyton.
Where my life's gone. Mama pushed me like the magazine right on. The world's dark, I still swing, getting my fight on. Future feeling bright without the light on. I take a trip down memory lane. All the past, you've been slain. This is insane. A young girl's getting sexually assaulted and raped on the reg. This is not their fault, kid. It's hard for me to sit back, enjoy life like it's all cool, going after dreams like Mike. Many folks are blind yapping at chit chatter, like Lauryn Hill feels like nothing even matters. But still way down deep inside, there's a small voice telling me to keep it in drive. So I mash the gas to keep going, knowing that I'm rolling with the one who's in control of it all. With the dice, but I had to give the gab to go downtown and cop jewels for the right price. And since then I've been negotiating, making moves up and down, but overall elevating. Elevate your mind past white supremacy. Being black is not bad, y'all can stop killing me. When I say stop killing me, I'm talking black on black crime, because we kill the closest one to his flatline. Christ died for the lost, why don't we kill? It's like aborting the baby cause you're on the pill. It's time to step up and seek out common sense. The devil crept up and leaks out his nonsense, and we the ones losing. Supposed to be the head, not the tail, but the one who flips the coin, the one chooses. So raise your fist high. I know most people ain't feeling me. They look up to the ceiling, be like this guy. From, cause I was acting like a fool, really dumb, son. We used to roll the urban backwoods in 94, treating girls like less than slimy raw. I'm not bragging about it, I'm just trying to show the youth that you could be saved too. Scream and shout about it, there's no doubt about it. God came and swooped down, changed his clown, and now he's bought about it. No reason to pout, just send the praise up. He jacked Lazarus so you he can raise up. It ain't about me, but it's about the folks who didn't doubt me and put me on this route B. I had to eliminate the negativity and put positive folks in close proximity. The knuckleheads talk about the drug trade, and getting paid was played. I said what up and stayed away, cause we're on two different paths. I'm working at McDonald's, they laugh, don't understand the math. So hold on to your dreams, hold to your life, hold to your passion, get rid of strife. Negative people, sometimes you gotta let them go, cause they'll hold you back from reaching your goals. So you can chill now, but you'll suffer later. I'd rather suffer now, cause I know my future's greater.
I love that. Oh, I'll trust in you through it all. That's a great song, and it's even an even greater message, right?
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about the vocals on that with Latricia. I love her voice. It's great.
Yeah, we've been getting she sings at my church. As soon as when I heard her, I was like, oh my goodness, this girl can sing. So she was singing some worship songs at our church, and I just said, oh, I gotta figure out how can I do something with her. So I had this song, and I didn't have anything in the chorus. I said, hey, you know, so they came by and they helped write it, and then she just went and go ahead. She did it, and I was like, oh, that's perfect.
Yeah, really. Yeah, excellent. I love it. She's so beautiful too. I watched the video of that. It's a great video, by the way. So
thank you.
Good on that. Let's back up a little bit. You mentioned what was that?
Nothing, sorry, that was me. I apologize.
Domingo.
Computer
that's
glitch.
Okay. I heard Atlanta Life Radio, so that's cool. Okay.
Yes, computer glitch. There you go.
That's okay. No issues. One thing, okay, so you mentioned that through all of this crap and everything that was going on in your life, you at one point you were stabbed, and I think if I'm remembering correctly, so you had all this going on, you were part of a program that if you were a victim of a stabbing or a violent act, you were part of a program where they would help you, I guess, to cope or to deal with stuff like that, and that kind of segued and introduced you to Ulrich Johnson, who obviously is a very instrumental, what I believe, divine intervention type person in your life. Tell me about your relationship with Ulrich and how that came about.
Yeah, so there was a number of nurses that were at Boston City Hospital, and, you know, between 1989 and 91, you know, we were dealing with some of the worst numbers of homicides and violent acts in the Boston area. So that was the time that I had came in. So there were a bunch of nurses who were just overwhelmed and tired of seeing all of these young people coming in with these stab wounds, and they would just come stab wounds or gunshots or being paralyzed. So they ended up starting something called a violence prevention program. And they were trying to teach people to be nonviolent and, you know, give them something alternative when they left so that they wouldn't go back out into the street and then get killed. So that's where I got introduced to them and started doing I was attending some of the meetings, but I still was knee-deep in what was going on in the street. And so what had happened with Ulrich was once I got into an altercation with one of the gentlemen out in the street, with a few gentlemen, and I got introduced to him because I was facing some court, and I was going to court, and I needed to, you know, my mom felt I was crazy and needed a therapist, so we, we started working with him, and he really helped me to hone in on my anger. He helped channel my anger, and I began to go out and talk to young people about stopping the violence. So that's actually, he came to court with me. You know, it was an attempted murder charge that was over my head. Mm-hmm. I was being accused of firing a firearm at someone. So he came to court with me, in which the judge had said I was guilty. He got up and spoke and said that I can guarantee if you let Domingo Guyton leave from here today with no charges, he won't be back in here. And the judge let me go, and I ain't never went back.
Wow. How, like I said, definitely a divine intervention for sure. But like you said, even so you had, you know, he was in your life and he was such a positive influence, but like you said, you were still kind of at this point, kind of knee deep in everything. You know,
yeah.
I feel like God was definitely turning the tide at that point, you know. And I think what I really like too is the part in the film, and gosh, I can't wait. You know, I keep referring to the film, and I hope that everyone gets to and wants to see it. But there's this one part where you go back to the guys you hung out with, you know, in your neighborhood, and you're like, hey, you know, can't you see that this is a dead end? Can't you see that, you know, you're not going anywhere? And they just couldn't see it. And then there's this photograph of you. Tell us about that particular point, because it's kind of a prophetic point in time in the film for you.
So I was working at McDonald's, and I remember looking out on my, you know, when I go out to my front porch, you could see the whole street from one end to the other. So we would go out on the porch, scan the whole street, see what's going on. And so I could see them out. So I went out there and I said, hey, what's up, man? How y'all doing? And try to talk to them. And they were like, yeah, Mingo, you're a punk. Go ahead in the house. You don't hang no more. And I was like, man, don't y'all see the street life is dead? And they were like, man, get out of here, man. Go to McDonald's and go flip those burgers. And that was sort of the way that they talked to me. And it really hurt because, you know, here are these guys I've been hanging with for all my life. And finally, I began to make some changes. Well, first I saw that they weren't really about the street life because they wouldn't come to court with me. I had asked some of them to come to court with me because it was me that was going there. And then it was four of these other guys that were considered our enemies. So I was more afraid of what was going to happen once court was over. I was thinking that they were going to wait outside for me and they were going to jump me. And I was asking my friends to come to court with me, and they were having excuses. None of them came. So once that happened, and when I was sitting in that courtroom, I looked who was with me. It was my mother that was there, and it was Dr. Johnson. I said, oh, this street life, this is a joke. And you guys aren't even really about what you say you are. You're not really going to be there through thick and thin. So that's when I gave up. So I went out there. I tried to talk to them. They didn't want to hear nothing I said. And I asked some of them to take a picture with me. They said no. Three of them sat down with me and took a picture. And one of those gentlemen is deported to Jamaica. And another one's deported to Haiti. And the other one's doing a prison sentence for allegedly shooting a cop's son.
Wow.
Robbed for his sneakers. So it's they're all gone. All those three guys that are in that picture with me are all gone. And that's, I love those brothers. I mean,
yeah.
But,
well, like you said, it's heartbreaking. Yeah, it's heartbreaking. Well, we're going to take a short break at this point, just a real brief station break. When we come back, we're going to continue to talk with Domingo about his life journey, how his grace and mercy of the Lord basically, I guess, continue to transform his life. So don't go away. We will be right back.
Hi, this is Executive Producer Mel D, and we thank you for tuning into today's show. Today's show would not be made possible without the support of our loyal sponsors. If you own a business, offer a service, or are a fan of the show, become a sponsor. Please go to our website at www.AtlantaLifeRadio.com to the Advertise With Us page to view and download our new advertising kit. We offer new and affordable opportunities for you to become a part of our shows. And now, we return back to our program.
Okay, and we are back. If you've just joined us, I'm Christine KFC, and this is Soul Inspiration. We're talking today with a very blessed man, musician, entrepreneur, and filmmaker, Domingo Guyton. Okay, so Domingo, before the break, you basically were at a point in life you disconnected from this group of people who just really weren't on the same path that you probably felt inside you were, you know, the path that you needed to go. You end up going to college, which is very cool. Even, you know, further from that, even getting a master's degree. But your college experience was still, you were still on a walk where you're still trying to be obedient, because it looks like you were getting into music. What happened? At what point did you really start to produce music, record music for that matter?
That's exactly what happened. I got to college. I was a freshman. I was in the dorms. I was kind of like, all right, what am I doing here? I was kind of feeling out of place. And but at those times, we had answering machines, and they were like cassette tapes.
Right.
So what I would do was, and I wanted to make sure I got all my calls. I had to call back people. I was in this place where I didn't know anyone. So I was joking around, and I would take the cassette. I would play instrumentals in the background, and I would like rhyme. I would rhyme a answering machine message. And so people were calling me, and they were like, that sounds really good. Like, what are you over there doing? And, like,
right.
You're supposed to be in school. You're like some, you know, they were calling me the answer machine rapper or something. And it was like, and then I began to, like, put these songs. Like, people would call, and I would put, like, a minute or two-minute message, but it would be, like, a full song. And it would, I would talk about whatever was going on. It was just like a joke. But people really, like, yo, that is hot. They were, like, really saying it. Mm-hmm. I would, and then through that, I met my buddy, Willie Bates, and I met Sharon Brown, and then we began sort of rapping together and just joking around and cracking on each other.
Well, okay, and so at that point, though, and again, from the documentary, it's so some of the, I guess, the content of what you were rapping at that point wasn't really what you would feel now you'd want to rap, I guess. So take us through that. Exactly. So the concept of what you were talking about and the wording, the words that you used were, you know, just not really what we need to be putting out there. So what happened? I mean, you were doing that, and what transformed you from that way to the way of the Lord?
Well, that's definitely a long story, but the short end of it is I didn't come to the Lord until probably about 9 years after I was in college. And so in that 9 year period, when I first went to college, I had just got out of, you know, it was basically out of a war. So here I am dealing with, you know, post-traumatic stress and, you know, dealing with whatever I just got out of this crazy war. And now I'm just sitting at this college. I have to try to figure out how to survive. And through that, I had been through a lot of pain with women, and I had been dealing with a lot of females, you know, and so I still was, you know, suppressing the pain with alcohol, suppressing the pain with, I began smoking marijuana once I got to school. So it's like that, then I started going down into a deeper pit of women and more drugs and more alcohol, and that just, So then now I'm recording, and then we went to a local talent show, me and one of my buddies, and we actually won $250 cash. You know, we won, so that just boosted our ego, like, oh, we're the best thing since sliced bread. So it's like, now we're going into recording studios, and we're starting to record, and everything that we're talking about is just women, clubs, you know, drinking, and all of that. And so that was a 9 year span, and of course, God was tapping on my heart through everything that was going on, so it wasn't an overnight process. So how I got from there to the other side, it probably happened about 2000. I was on tour with Tavares. I was playing drums, and it was around 2002. We were on a tour. I think we were going to Detroit, and I let the lead singer of Tavares hear one of my singles for my new project, and he said, "Oh my goodness, this is amazing." He said, "You don't have to swear. Why are you cursing so much?" And it just finally, after everything that I had been through with my grandmother, my aunts, my uncles, my family, the church, vacation Bible school, Sunday school, everything all sort of came together at that moment. It all, like, it was all the planting of the seeds and the watering. It all began to sprout up at that moment. He said, we were, you know, 30,000 feet up above the, you know, the ground, and he's like, "You don't have to swear so much." And it just hit me. And and then I said, I got off the plane and I began writing raps that had no swearing in them. I began to try to write songs about uplifting the community. I began to write songs about taking care of each other, uplifting women. And of course, I did that for a couple of years, and that was a prime area for the Lord just to fully change my heart.
Right. And so he was such a pivotal person in your life, too. And I remember Tavares from back in the day. Love their music, by the way. So, you just never know. You just never know who God's going to put in your life. And one thing I did notice, too, is So you really started honing in on the business side of things as well. Was this the first time maybe you realized you had not only, you know, recording talent, you're rapping, and you had a good business sense for it?
Well, the first business I remember running, I had a mm-hmm. bubblegum business when I was in middle school. Now,
okay.
This was serious. I had a serious bubblegum. We had these orange fortune bubble. They were these orange fortune gums that they sold for a penny in the inner city. Again, I lived in the inner city, and when uh-huh. I went out to the white schools, they'd never seen them before. So I was selling them for 5 cents to them, and so they were loving them. So kids were coming in like asking me for $5 worth of these 5 cent gums, and so I was going to the I would come home, go to the corner store, buy like $20 worth of penny gum. They were looking at me like I was crazy, like, what is this kid doing with all this gum? And then I was going to school selling it for 5 cents. I was making a killing. And the school came to me and was like, you can't sell that stuff. It's, you know, you can only sell like the chocolate bars or whatever we're doing. You can't. So they forced me to stop. Soon later they began to have those, the cans began to be 5 cents, and then the plastic mm-hmm. bottles were 10 cents. So we would walk around the neighborhood with trash bags, and I had three or four guys with me, and we would go fill up all these trash bags and then go take them and get the money and then just go spend it all on candy and goofy stuff. But that was sort of like my childhood entrepreneurial, you know, things that we did, so.
Yeah, and like you said, you did have, I mean, your family background is so diverse, and there's entrepreneurial seeds in there as well. But let's go ahead, play another song. This one kind of is a little, to me, it's called Song for Pops, and it's really very to the point. It's, again, from your Footprints in the Concrete soundtrack, but you're very transparent. You tell it like it is. It's telling a song as life happens, the good, the bad, and the ugly. But also, what I got out of it, Domingo, it's a song of grace and forgiveness mm-hmm. that God placed in your heart. And mm-hmm. I think, and as I play it right now, people will hear the words and they'll know exactly what it's about. So here it is, everybody. The song is titled Song for Pops by Domingo Guyton.
Thank you.
Like 21, mama's like 19. Y'all was hanging out, having fun in the night scene. When she thought of a man in her life, all she could see is you. Her grandfather dead and her daddy died when she was two. And all her sisters are married, I'm telling you what's left. Mama searching for a man that could take a breath. You was cute and all light skin and curly hair. Mackin' back in the 70s, making a girly stare. So you'd whine and dine, cause she thought you was fine. But you had one thing on your mind, that was getting that behind. When mom got pregnant, you was out the door. No more whine and dining, no more going out no more. Just a big belly growing and a mind now racing. She's steady showing and her spine's now aching. Everybody knowing that the time is not waiting. December 75, roll out the 9 month patient.
Why you didn't care?
Why daddy don't call? Why he don't visit? We ain't never spoke at all. What does he look like, mama? Do you got any pictures? The last time you spoke to him, did he say that he missed you? What was the issue? Why y'all didn't stay together? If you wasn't married, why did y'all lay together? Well, I thank you, ma, for just being here to listen. Even though the answers to my questions are missing. And I'm a teen now, you know we wild. Daddy, you should have been here to pull me from the crowd. Well, dad, yeah. Getting back to you, you should be glad, cause now I'm taking after you, and playing games seem fun. laughing too. Having sex with multiple women is what I have to do. Like father, like son is the thing I'll cherish. Maybe one day we'll meet before our souls perish.
Why?
Different now that I've got older. There's more love in my heart since the world got colder. I don't hold it against you, the time we've lost, all the years I felt that you signed me off. I think mom is still hurt, but she'll be alright. She's still calling out to Christ on her knees at night. And I changed my life around so that God is pleased. Now I'm ministering to some of the hardest cheese. And the young folks, some actually listen to me. And as you know, there is hope. Eventually, I will be able to say peace and I love you. Put our differences to the side and just hug you. Forgive each other for all the wrongs we've done, all the wicked thoughts we've had and the songs we've sung. If it's still alive, I hope we'll be able to meet. And if you're dead, instead I'll say rest in peace. So I guess I'm signing off, but I want you to know that I love you, Dad, even though we didn't grow together. You and Mom messed up, that's life, and we could be forgiven cause Christ has life. A lot of y'all might be hurt by somebody that you love, a husband, wife, boyfriend, or none of the above. Just find it in your heart to forgive them and make the decision to show them love while they still living.
Wonder why you did.
Wow. It's really, honestly, Domingo, it's hard for me to keep it together when I listen to that song, because I can feel where that's coming from.
Wow. Amen.
I mean, and like I said, it's such an honor. It's like a testament to the grace and forgiveness that you have for your father. So tell us. I mean, obviously, we all know, maybe we all don't know. Forgiveness to me is a powerful thing. It releases you from the chains and the shackles. A lot of people don't understand that. But tell me a little bit about how you think forgiveness has played a role in your life and in receiving the abundance of the Lord in forgiving people.
Well, I first have done a lot of wrong to a lot of people, primarily a lot of women. And so first, going back and as much as I can, as many as I'm able to, and to ask for forgiveness, and truly from the bottom of my heart, not some, so that's number one, going and asking for forgiveness to those that I have done wrong. I have been able to probably connect anyone that if it's Facebook or if it's email or if it's any in person, I've been able to go do that. Has been wonderful to be able to free myself and to give them closure. They've talked about the closure that it has given, and then through that, also forgiving people that have done me wrong when I was a youngster, and then also so that being able to forgive people and then being able to forgive my father and my mother, because my mom was not a saint. She played a part in it also.
Sure.
And keeping my father away and all that. He didn't even know I was born. So from what he says, he doesn't even know I was born. So it's been truly just so powerful to be able to forgive and to move forward and be able to try to have some sort of a normal life as possible. My father did pass away. He passed away 2 years ago. But I was able to spend 2.5 years with him, and he was able to meet his granddaughters, and so we had a good time.
Excellent, excellent. And so like, here you are today. You've got everything going for you, seemingly. You've got a beautiful wife. You've got children. You've got this new company, Hope Multimedia. You just finished the Footprints in the Concrete. I know you've done some other films, or at least another film previously. You travel around the U.S. You speak to disadvantaged or at-risk youths. Tell me a little bit about that. I know maybe it's – I don't know if it's – you're currently doing that, or at some point you were doing that as a professor for a school. I think I remember reading that somewhere about your talking with at-risk kids.
Yeah, so I began doing peer mediation as a 15-year-old. I began working for the spinal cord injury unit in Boston. So youth that had been shot in the spine or stabbed and they were paralyzed, I would go in and do peer mediation and encouraging them to not retaliate. And so that was sort of my job as a 15-year-old. So then with the college, I began working as a clinical counselor. Working in a nonprofit and working in a lot of assessment centers and places that are trying to assess the issues, whether it's short-term or long-term residential programs, done that for well over 10, 12, 15 years. And then I began to work in two college settings where I was teaching classes primarily about African-American history / community work / the connections between hip-hop and slavery, a lot of modern culture issues. So that was sort of what I did in the college sector. And then that was while I was in Massachusetts. I did that for about 6 or 7 years, and then we moved to Georgia. So since I moved to Georgia, I've been doing Hope Multimedia full-time. And that's what that's what I do. I'm music and film producer, and that's what I'm doing since I've been here in Georgia.
Okay, and so you've got, like I said, how can people see Footprints in the Concrete? I know sometimes, I guess, a movie is a film is produced and sold to organizations or churches, and groups then go watch it in that way. But what are your distribution plans for it?
Distribution plans, we're waiting to see if Netflix picks it up. It's on the Netflix table now, and we're waiting to see if they're going to pick it up. If they don't pick it up, we will more than likely do our own distribution, and we will have copies available later this fall. And we'll just begin getting them out to as many as possible. The way folks can reach me is, my name is Domingo Guyton, and you can reach me on social media. I'm on Facebook, I'm on Twitter, I'm on Instagram. And that's sort of the best way to reach me. And if you want to talk about doing a screening at your church, I can let you know what the ramifications is. And, there was the film was considered rated R. So I know some outlets might not screen it because of the language, as we're talking about some of my past life. But there is a redemptive message of Jesus Christ saves. And that's the point of the film, is to show you how down and low down I was to how far the Lord has brought me and where he's brought me today.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you got to go there. And I think a lot of, not to lessen the rating on it, and the reasons why they put our ratings on things, but to be realistic, unfortunately, so many kids today at such a young age, 10, 11, 12, they've heard the language, they know about it. They're actually speaking it, they're doing those things. And so, you know, on one hand, I understand the rating system, but then on the other hand, these are the kids that need to see something like that. So I guess it would be a situation where maybe parents, you know, bring their kids to it, you know, and
yes.
Every parent knows their own kids' maturity level, but absolutely to expose your child to the, like you said, the redemptive message of Jesus Christ. And that's basically what your movie is about. It's real life and how you can overcome those things. And look what you're doing today with everything, you know. And I understand. So, and I understand now that also you've got another something else, another film in the works for 2017.
Yes, our arms are, our sleeves are rolled up, and we are focusing on this film, which we shot a film in 2012 called YTF, which stands for Jesus Christ is the Same Yesterday, Today, Forever, and it's about a modern-day Jesus walking around the inner city, and as if he never came before on Earth. So that film went on to win 5 awards and festivals. So now it's about 46 minutes. It's a short, and we're available to screen that. That can be screened at churches. No problem. There's no language issues or anything. We have a full soundtrack on iTunes for that also. That film, we're going to be shooting a feature for that. And that's what we're rolling our sleeves up for now.
Wow. Well, I want to add, too, the other day I was YouTubing in preparation for the interview today, and I found a trailer for YTF. And
yes.
Wow. Okay, the trailer itself. Okay, the production of the trailer was so good because it really makes me want to see more. It makes me want to know more. It was so good. I know that's going to be a hit as well. I know. And honestly, Domingo, everything, you know, I know we've met recently, but everything I know and feel about you, you have such a wonderful a vibe and a smile and a countenance. And I truly believe that you're an anointed person. I know that God obviously has had his hand and an eye on you from the beginning. And, you know, you were definitely, I believe, meant to do great things. And I know you're just going to, you know, continue to do what you're doing and attract those things in your life. I just really feel that. So, you know, I wish you nothing but the best. And we're actually kind of getting to the end of our show now. So I did want to wrap it up here and just thank you so much for you know, joining me today. Keep doing what you do for God's glory. And it's just been a blessing to chat with you.
Well, thank you, Ms. Christine. It's been awesome. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you for this wonderful opportunity, and I want to thank Miss Melinda also, who I met at the film festival in Atlanta. And so both you, Melinda, and Christine, you all are awesome. Thank you for what you do. Let's stay connected, find out ways that I can help you all in what you're doing also.
Absolutely. And on my closeout, Domingo, I'm going to remind everybody about connecting with you through your various, you know, social media and whatnot. Okay, so we'll keep in touch.
Thank you.
And, thank you so much, and God bless.
God bless. Thank you all.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay.
Be sure to follow Domingo Guyton on Facebook and all social media, like he's mentioned, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. You can also find out more about Domingo by checking out www.hopemultimedia.com. I believe that is a new and revamped website they're working on. And also, don't forget to download his newly released soundtrack, to Footprints in the Concrete, which is the film that he just directed and produced. And again, the download, you can do that on iTunes. So again, this wraps up another week of soul-inspiring music, magic, and message. On behalf of the entire Atlanta Life Radio team, I'm your host, Christine Kiefsi, reminding you that this broadcast of the Soul Inspiration Show will be available as a podcast on AtlantaLifeRadio.com, the Atlanta Life Radio iTunes channel, and at Stitcher.com, the premier choice for news radio and podcast listening. And remember, when you listen to a Soul Inspirations show, you're not only supporting the guests, but all musicians, whose melodies create the musical landscape of our lives. It's what I call living your life in the key of C.